When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and there's Jerry over there. So this is Stuff You Should Know, Controversy Edition.
Yeah, sure, there will be some of that in here for sure, but I also think it's important when we're talking about removing public monuments that it's not all about Confederate monuments.
No, actually, I'm glad you said that because that actually brings up a pretty good intro. There's some monuments in New York City.
New York City.
Yeah, that was such a great commercial, wasn't it?
It's endured.
There's four of them, actually, that are being targeted for removal by activists.
Garibaldi?
No. Although Columbus is one of them.
I believe that.
The Columbus statue in Columbus Circle.
Yeah.
One of Teddy Roosevelt. I think it's at the Museum of Natural History.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, what's wrong with this one? What's wrong with Teddy Roosevelt? And then if you go and look at the statue in this context, you're like, yeah, okay, I can kind of see that one. He's like valiantly astride this horse, and this African tribesman and this Native American chief are down on the ground on either side of him.
Yeah.
Like he's just in charge of the show, right?
Sure.
So I can kind of see that one. There's another one of a guy named J. M. Sims, I believe is his name. He's known as the father of gynecology.
I don't know why I laughed at that. I guess I'll just go ahead.
So his
statue?
That's why he had a statue. It's just him with a giant vulva right behind him. It's just him, like, you know, a normal statue honoring a man. And the problem is that although he's the father of gynecology, he was also known in the first half of the 19th century to carry out like experimental surgery on slave women with like zero anesthesia,
whoa,
obviously without consent. And he's been compared to Joseph Mengele, basically, as just this mad scientist with zero regard for human life.
Wow.
And you might say, well, this is the first half of the 19th century, but some people argue that even at the time, what he was doing would have been considered by his contemporaries as unethical.
Well, and as you will see as we go through this, so much of the conversation around this controversy is, do we look at it through the lens of when it was put up, why it was put up, who it was put up by, or do we look at it through the lens of, hey, it's 2018, do we still need to honor someone now who we know did monstrous things?
Yeah, those are all really great questions. Or should we leave it up as a cautionary tale is another argument.
Yeah, and we're going to wade into all these waters.
So the reason that we're even talking about this and the reason why you can, had you been around towns like Baltimore, New Orleans, Helena, Montana, in the summer of 2017, you would have seen Confederate statues being removed, sometimes in the dead of night.
Sure.
The whole reason all of this started was actually back in 2015 when was it the Columbia? It was Columbia, South Carolina. It wasn't Charleston, right? It was Charleston.
Yeah, the church shooter.
Yeah, the church shooter, the Charleston church massacre where 9 people died by an avowed white supremacist, right? Really started up this idea that, and I think it woke a lot of, you know, the establishment up to the idea that there's all this iconography all around the country that a pretty large section of people have a real issue with, and that everybody's just totally ignored their problems with it for decades, right? That really kind of woke a lot of people up, and it got a lot of city councils around the country reevaluating why they had these things up still. Was it worth just taking down? And a lot of them did take some stuff down, right?
Yeah.
And then in the summer of 2017, I think it was – was it May or August? Was it August the Charlottesville rally was held?
I can't remember the month, but yeah.
But it was 2017, the hotter months of 2017. There was a white supremacist rally in favor of the Robert E. Lee statue that was marked to be, well, it was controversial, this statue of Robert E. Lee from Charlottesville. And people had been talking about taking it down. So white supremacists met to support the statue. Counter protests, met the white supremacists, and violence broke out. One woman died. And it was just a bad scene. That created even more, like, a second wave of people looking at these statues and said, okay, not only are these possibly, like, creating a unfriendly public environment for people, like whole swaths of people that are Americans here in the United States, but they can also serve as flashpoints for violence. Maybe we should really rethink these. And by the time the second wave happened, state legislatures around the country, especially in the South, had intervened between the first wave and the second wave and started passing legislation that said you can't remove public monuments, especially ones that are dedicated to war heroes, wars that have been around for like 40 years or more.
Right.
Basically putting an end to the easy removal of Confederate monuments around the country. And so all this has done is created this huge conflict. Well, it was already a conflict one way or the other, but this the conflict is now both sides are just butting up against each other. And, you know, when you push two masses together, they tend to go upward. And that's basically what's happening right now. Lava is going upward here in the United States as tensions are rising. And it has never been more tense in my lifetime and probably your lifetime as well, Chuck, which are virtually the same thing. But that's where we stand right now in January of 2018.
Right. Can we cover some history here, though?
Yeah, let's.
All right, so this is nothing new, though, as far as just taking down public monuments. The world, since the beginning of time, has erected monuments and then eventually had someone that wants to take down that monument.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in America, when we one of the first things we did when the Revolutionary War kicked off was said, hey, let's go down to the King George III statue in Manhattan and let's pull that thing down. On July 9th, 1776, we just heard the Declaration of Independence for the first time.
Mm-hmm. It really got them going.
Yeah. And let's take down that statue. And you know what? Let's not only do that. Let's melt down that thing into 40 plus thousand bullets to fire upon them with.
Yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
It's pretty, pretty ironic.
You know,
said, here's some King George for you, red coat. I think that's what they said.
And this goes well beyond that, of course. Spanish raised Aztec and other temples in the Americas, so Catholic cathedrals could be built. Like, basically, someone would take over, tear down those statues, put up their own.
Yeah.
Then someone else would come along, tear down those statues. And, it, you know, it wasn't always – a lot of times it was a good thing. So you would have, like, in Hungary in 1956, you had the Hungarian uprising against the Soviets, and they stormed Budapest and tore down a statue of Stalin. Stalin had quite a few, and Lenin, quite a few statues of themselves toppled over the years.
Yeah, wherever communism spread, if there was like a communist-backed regime or country or even just a non-backed but communist polarized country, you could probably find a statue of at least Lenin, if not Stalin, too, in this country. Even like places like Ethiopia had them, right? And so when there's an invading army or a revolution or a regime change, this is usually when you see a statue torn down.
Yeah, it's a symbolic gesture.
Sure, it is. And it's almost like not, it's, but it's also like a part of the healing process, it seems like, too, or at least the transition process. Let's call it that, right?
Yeah.
Then there's another type of situation where statues tend to get torn down. And that's when there's like a cultural shift. And that's kind of what we're seeing now with the Confederate monument controversies.
Right. And what you've also seen in the 2000s in Latin America, where in places like Venezuela, mm-hmm. statues of Columbus started to come down and replaced with things like indigenous chiefs who once tried to fight off people like Columbus.
Yeah, Guai Caipuro.
Yeah, which is that's a full shift from not only are we going to not walk by this Columbus statue every day, mm-hmm. now that we know, but we're going to put up a statue of people that tried to defend against him.
Right. Right. So it's almost like they are hundreds of years later throwing off the shackles of imperialism, I guess.
The stank of imperialism.
Right.
Should we take a break?
I'm pretty worked up, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we need to go rub each other's shoulders for a minute.
Okay.
All right.
Prepare for it. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
Okay, so the place we find ourselves right now. Well, how about this, Chuck? Why are there any public monuments anywhere? Anyway, right? Like, I think that's kind of the core of this. We have to get to what is really being talked about here. Because if it's just some statue or something like that, especially in some places like far flung as Helena, Montana, what does a statue of the Confederacy have anything to do with? What does any statue have anything to do with?
Yeah, well, first of all, there are more than, according to Southern Poverty Law Center, more than 1,500 statues, mm-hmm. flags, plaques, city names, county names, street names, and holidays, named, and even military bases named after Confederate generals or mm-hmm. dedicated somehow to the American Confederacy.
Yeah. And that includes everything from like you said, street names and flags and all that.
Right.
There's like
not just statues.
There's 700 statues and monuments just on public property. So 700 of those are statues and monuments. And 32 of those have either been dedicated or rededicated since 2000.
Right. So what these these range anywhere from Confederate Avenue over on the east side of Atlanta, mm-hmm. which is just a street name, to you drive through Atlanta and you see, if you pay attention, you see Civil War battle plaques all over the place. Mm-hmm. And these are, I put these in a slightly different category because they are literally just historical markers. Like,
they're very neutral.
On this, in this Sonic parking lot, there once was a battle waged between this brigade and this brigade on this date, and this is what happened here.
Not even that sometimes. It'll be like the Confederate Army thought about making camp here, but decided not to, so they did a quarter mile east of this spot.
Yeah, because it's a little hilly, don't you think?
Right. Can you blame them?
Yeah, and those, I put those in a different category because those are historical markers of where something happened. It's not saying, maybe some of them do, but it's not saying this is where the proud sons of the 18th Brigade fought off the evil Yanks mm-hmm. in their bid to ensure slavery.
Yeah, that tends to be, you'll find those more on like monuments or statues.
Right.
Especially ones that were bankrolled by private individuals or private groups who were just one and the same with the people who were running that little town at the time.
Yeah, I mean, all right, so that's sort of the crux for me with this whole thing.
What?
Is when, where, when and why were these things erected to begin with?
Yeah.
And by whom? And in many, many cases, some private rich person paid for this thing to be put up as a definitive screw you to what was going on in the country at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's very rarely has it just been like, hey, you know what? We should just put up a statue because we think Robert E. Lee is a great general. Time and time again, you see stories, for instance, Charlottesville, that statue of Robert E. Lee. Yeah. It was commissioned and paid for by a wealthy individual named Paul Goodloe McIntyre in 1917 when he also bought the surrounding park and said, this is for whites only, and let's put a statue of General Lee. Like, the context of how that happened is key to me.
Right. And actually, Chuck, that still goes on today. A lot of the monuments that are erected to the Confederacy are erected through private funding on private land, which makes them wholly out of reach of any debate over whether they should be removed or not, because that is covered by two very important American rights, which is the right to free speech, whether people like it or not, and private property rights. You
right.
put those two things together, something is basically untouchable.
Yeah, and listen, we say all of this, like, I'm not really weighing in. I think people probably know how I feel, let's be honest. I'm not weighing in here one way or the other, but we say all that just to say that just because there is a statue that looks great and it was really expensive in a town square, it doesn't mean that it represented ever, maybe, or certainly now, the wants of the community at large. Sometimes it may have just been a single individual mm-hmm. that had enough sway and money to say, I want this statue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's a very, and I think, who wrote this? Was it Dave Ruse?
Yeah.
He put it best. He said, what it represents is a very narrow historical record.
Right. Especially at the time, it might have really not represented a lot of people. It might, in some cases, it may, more people may feel represented by it now than they did at the time. Apparently, especially for some of these older ones, it was not a normal thing to erect some sort of memorial to the Confederacy immediately after the Civil War.
Right.
For a couple of reasons. One is that there were plenty of Union veterans still around the country, and they would not have been very happy to have seen something like that. And then secondly, the South was very, very poor for decades after the war. It was not a wealthy place. There was not a lot of money running around for towns to put together enough money to erect a decent statue that would last for 100 years. But like you said, though, by the time that they did start to be erected, it coincided with some really important, something very important, which was the Jim Crow era.
Yeah, either Jim Crow, a lot of them, or the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
So it's not an accident.
No. The Southern Poverty Law Center is an organization that tracks hate groups. And if you're a hate group, you probably don't put much stock into studies created by the Southern Poverty Law Center. But the SPLC did a study of Confederate markers, monuments, statues, street names, all that stuff around the country. And they found that the vast majority of these things were erected in like the Jim Crow era, from like, say, 1890 till just after the First World War. That's when most of the statues to the Confederacy and monuments were erected. And this is a time when the South had gone through Reconstruction. The North had abandoned the Reconstruction project. From what I understand, I didn't realize this before, but basically there was this period, what was called a period of healing between the North and the South, that the divisiveness between the two areas grew so deep that war broke out. And then afterward, the hurt feelings started to subside enough that there was this desire to come back together, to heal. And the North and the South decided that they would heal at the expense of the African Americans, and they would find common ground by saying, yeah, I think we can all agree that whites are the supreme race. And the African Americans, who had just recently been freed in the South and were carrying out Reconstruction, said, wait, what? And this is the Jim Crow era. That kicked off the Jim Crow era. And this is the time when these monuments started to be erected. Like you said, it doesn't seem to have been much of an accident, the timing. And if you talk to some historians, they say, no, it was no accident whatsoever. This was whites saying, you might not be by law, under white control any longer, but it's pretty plain and simple. We've just erected a monument to remind you that about white supremacy, and that's the law of the land. Where's your statue and your monument? I don't see it anywhere, so I guess we win.
Yeah, I mean, the Georgia state flag controversy is the prime example. I remember when that was happening in the early 2000s. For those of you who don't know, the Georgia state flag from 1956 to 2001 was changed and had the good old Confederate stars and bars on the right half of it. And I remember at the time a lot of people saying, you know, this is our history, this is you can't change our flag. You can't change our flag, erasing history. And I think many of them may not even have realized that that was not the original flag. They went back to the original flag after 2001, but they threw those stars and bars on there in 1956. And what was going on in Atlanta in 1956, you know?
Right, the civil rights era, segregation, or desegregation, I should say.
Yeah, and it was just very plainly a middle finger to desegregation. And once again, a reminder, we're going to fly this flag now that has the Confederate battle flag on it. And you know, 50-something years later, in the 2000s, maybe a lot of people will forget that this was not the original flag, and that's exactly what happened.
Man, it happened in aces, too.
Yeah.
So the SPLC study found what you're saying, that there were basically two big, and there were always Confederate monuments and statues being erected or streets being named that or flags going up. But there were two periods, the Jim Crow era and the Civil Rights era, where they really increased. And the fact that those statues and monuments really increased and coincided with these times of struggle for white supremacy, it really provides a pretty compelling case that those Confederate monuments and those rebel flags on those state houses are meant to express white supremacy.
Yeah.
It's tough to look at it any other way when you look at this timeline like that.
Yeah.
And that's what's at issue, you know? What is the meaning of the Confederate flag on a state house? What is the meaning of a Confederate monument or statue in a town square? What is it ultimately trying to say? And that's really at the heart of this controversy is, what are you trying to say with that thing? What are we now as a society in this small little town in Georgia or Alabama or Louisiana or wherever? What are we saying by fighting over keeping this statue or this flag flying? What's the argument here?
Well, yeah, people in favor of keeping them will say that it's, you know, it's dangerous to erase history. We can learn from these things. They can serve as reminders of how not to be, maybe. but at the very least, you can't erase history, so don't even try to erase history. So that's basically one of the main arguments against taking these down.
Right. Just you can't whitewash history. You can't erase history. Right.
Right.
So that's one. Another one is, and this is a big one that's really kind of kept a lot of these things up so far, is that the Confederate monuments, the Confederate statues, the Confederate flags are not meant as symbols of hatred or slavery or oppression. They are, you'll see people say that it's heritage, not hate, right?
Right.
And what they mean with that is this thing called the Lost Cause narrative, right?
Right.
So the Lost Cause narrative is this idea that, well, actually, I found that there's like six parts to it.
All right.
You ready for these?
Yes.
Because I'm going to lay them out. So the Lost Cause is basically this narrative that says that the South, the Confederacy, the Civil War, none of it had to do with slavery. Or if it did, it had very, very little to do with slavery. That really the Civil War was a war of Northern aggression. There was the North that started it. The
yeah.
South just wanted to secede from the North, just wanted to get away from this federal government that cared not about states' rights, that cared not about the South and its economy or its antebellum mansions or anything like that. That really was a war of Northern aggression, and that the Confederacy was just protecting their homeland, protecting their way of life, and that it was secession, not slavery, that was at issue here. And a lot of people say, well, what was the South seceding from if not the
state right to have slaves.
Right, exactly, right? There's some other tenets to it, too. This is very important. This is an important part of the Lost Cause narrative, is that actually slaves were happy to be enslaved. They were happy with their servitude. They didn't have to think about what to do with life. They didn't have to worry about wondering what they were going to do. And they were maybe too shiftless to really be responsible to manage their own life anyway. So they were actually happier under the antebellum plantation system of slavery than they were free.
Really?
That's a huge tenet of the Lost Cause. And then the other part of it, and the whole reason that it has the name the Lost Cause, is that the only reason that the Confederacy lost the Civil War was because the North was just so vastly richer with resources, manpower, industry, that the South from the beginning was destined to lose the war. It just couldn't compete in that respect, hence the name Lost Cause. The South's cause was lost from the outset. So if you are a defender of Confederate monuments, this is probably the reason you're giving for defending them, that these things are not up to intimidate anybody, that the people who are intimidated by them, the people who are taking them as white supremacy, are simply taking them the wrong way. And then, Chuck, there's one other thing that, like, is a question that has to be answered around this whole thing. And that is that, like, if it's true that, like, the original Confederate monuments that were put up around, like, say, the 1890s or up to the 1920s or something, right? If those things, like, actually were put up out of, like, respect for the people who fought for their homeland, and for family members, who have just recently died, and was actually out of like this respect for heritage rather than as a symbol of hate and oppression. Isn't it possible though that those same monuments could develop, racist symbolism over time for some people? And if that's the case, then, you know, if you are somebody who believes in them as a point of heritage and pride, how do you reconcile that? That for other people, they're saying, hey, yeah, white supremacy, buddy, I'm with you on that. How do you separate those two? And if that is the case, if you do agree that there are people out there who you have nothing to do with, who view these things as a symbol of white supremacy, then isn't your beef with them rather than the people who are offended by that and want to take those things down?
That's a good point. I don't have the answers, of course.
Well, no, I don't either. But I mean, this is just such a hornet's nest. It's just a ball of worms writhing around.
Yeah, it's complicated with you know, 700 plus like literal statues, each with their own backstory.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to make some huge generalization, probably.
For sure. For sure. It's true.
All right. Well, let's take another break. Let's take our final break. And we'll talk a little bit about just the ins and outs, like the sort of the mechanics of really removing these and how that works. And the counter argument to lost cause legally, which would hinge on the equal protection argument. Right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.
All right, so here's how these things are generally not only taken down, but how they're put up to begin with. We already mentioned the private wealthy citizen who just wants to do something like this. It's obviously one way it can go down. The other way is, as a lot of cities now, starting in the 1990s, have commissions for approving these monuments. They use Savannah, Georgia, a very historic city in our own state, as an example. They have a historic site and monument commission. They meet every month. They look at applications. Most cities will have an application process that you fill out that has to prove certain criteria to if you want a public monument. And they look over these all over the country all the time and either approve them or not. I always thought it was funny that one of the big parts is usually like, what's this going to cost us?
Right, exactly.
You know, like upkeep, like what are we looking at here? And like I said, these are pretty new, starting mostly in the 1990s and later. But it's generally to ensure that newer monuments has public support, whereas many of these older monuments may not have had wide public support, but it was influential, wealthy few that decided what went up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So, like we said, the massacre at the church in Charleston really set off the first wave, and then Charlottesville protests set off the second wave of statue removal, but in between, a lot of state legislatures intervened and said, no, you guys, you towns and cities, you're in our state and we're the law of the land, so we're saying you can't remove these monuments without our approval, and we're not going to give our approval to these things.
Right, but previous to that, when the states, previous to them reacting to that and making these laws, mm-hmm. it could be the city that decided, or the county, or whatever the local government was, or if it's on state-owned land, obviously it would be the state legislature.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of ways that, like, if the state hasn't intervened and created a state law that says you can't remove that, yeah, if you're a city council or a board of commissioners in a county or something like that, you have full authority to remove these things. And you can remove them for all sorts of different reasons. There's this, the article cites the statue in New York, the scary Lucille Ball statue. Yeah, you remember that?
I do.
Man, I went back and looked and, oh, I feel so bad for that sculptor, the first guy.
And Lucille Ball.
The second lady nailed it. I mean, she did such a good job.
I didn't see the second one, man. The first, oh yeah, I did see the second one.
It's just, when you see them side by side, you
one looks like Lucille Ball and one looks like Lucille Ball got zombie Lucille Ball.
Yeah, drawn by Ralph Steadman or something weird like that, you know?
Yeah.
So
looks nothing like her.
No, it really doesn't. So the city council of Celeron, New York, Lucille Ball's hometown, said, we don't like the statue. It's terrible. We're going to take it down.
It's scaring the kids.
So they took it down because it was an ugly statue. But a city council could say, we're going to take it down because we've heard from enough of our citizens that they're intimidated by it, or they think that this is it's creating a unsafe place, like it could be a flashpoint for violence, or it's in the way of the new Whole Foods that our town's getting. So let's get rid of this monument. So they can do this stuff unless the state has said, you guys can't move those things. This is, we're the state and you guys can't move these monuments.
Right.
Even on city land.
Right.
Right. So there's been, I think in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, at the very least, and I think several other states, they have passed these laws that say you can't remove these things. So some states have had, or some cities have had to get creative where their will has continued, their desire to take these statues down has continued even after the state said they can't. So the city of Memphis, which had a couple of statues that wanted to take down, one of Robert E. Lee
and one of Elvis,
one of Nathan. No, they're not touching that.
Yeah.
One of Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was one of the early leaders of the Klan.
Yeah.
They wanted these statues taken down, but they couldn't take them down because they resolved to take them down after Tennessee passed its protection law. Well, the city of Memphis sold the land that those two statues were on to a nonprofit, and the nonprofit just immediately took them down.
Oh, that's a workaround. So, as I mentioned before the break, we talked about the lost cause narrative, and the flip side to that legally is the equal protection argument. So we're talking about the 14th Amendment, mm-hmm. ratified in 1868 to grant citizenship and equal rights to former slaves. And this, to be clear, has not been used successfully yet in court as an argument to have a statue removed, but it is what groups like the ACLU or does the Southern Poverty Law Center, do they actually argue cases like this?
Probably, I'm sure.
This is what they would try to use most likely as a legal argument, or a tactic at least, to say that this isn't right. Because basically what it means is, what you were saying earlier, is it would be under the guise that this was erected as an expression of white supremacy. And that's why it was erected. That's why it's there. State-supported racism that's still there to make people feel unequal. And the 14th Amendment says we can't do that.
Yeah, that's the approach. That there will be some test case at some point in the next year or two that will make it to the Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court will probably rule on that, and then that will either open the floodgates or shut down that legal argument one way or another.
Right.
What's interesting to me, though, is that historians are probably going to come into these lawsuits, right? Like, if you ask just about any professional historian what started the Civil War, the consensus is and has been for a long time that it was slavery, that right. all the other stuff's the ability to secede, states' rights, the hatred of Lincoln, all of these other things are follow slavery, the South's desire to continue a slave-based economy, right?
Right.
If you ask the general public what caused the Civil War, apparently something like 48% will tell you that it was secession, and only like 23% will say slavery. So here's the problem with that. This is part of a kind of a larger trend that we've been seeing the last like 5 years or so, maybe less, where there's just been a loss of faith in expertise. Right?
Yeah.
Where like the people who we used to turn to for answers, we have just kind of tossed to the wayside and said, just shut up. We don't want to hear what you have to say any longer. We'll decide what's true on our own. And when that happens with enough people, then history has a chance of being rewritten just by sentiment. Hey, it can have nothing to do with reality, but everybody can decide that they're going to collectively remember things a certain way. And brother, that's history. That becomes history, whether it's fact-based history or revisionist history or not. And that's a problem. Like, we have to remember history, whether it is enjoyable, whether it's something that stands as a cautionary tale, whether it's something that is painful, whether it's something that's inspiring. We have to remember our history. We just have to, or else we're going to lose a lot of valuable lessons. The question that still remains is whether we have to remember that history in through monuments and statues, or if we can in other ways. So it's weird. There's a defense of history, but there's also a loss of faith in historians and their reading of history.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And
it's a bizarre
and incongruous.
It's a weird place to be right now here in the States.
It is. And that's why I'd never buy the, you're erasing history argument, because it's not like the Civil War plaque that just says this thing happened here. Like, to me, that is a historical marker that just says this action took place. It's not a monument glorifying the thing.
Yeah, there's this
there's little, a difference.
There's a monument in Rossville, Georgia, which is close to Andersonville, South Carolina. And it's a monument to a guy named Henry Wirz, who was one of the few executed war criminals from the Confederacy. He ran Andersonville prison and, basically ran it like a concentration camp. And he was executed by the North publicly. He was hanged. And very quickly, within a couple of decades, I think the Daughters of the Confederacy erected this monument to him and basically explained that he had been unfairly tried, that evidence against him had been faked, and that he was actually a war hero, not a war criminal.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's kind of like not the neutral plaque that you're talking about. It's the antithesis of that.
Well, I certainly don't have the answers. It's a complicated thing, but, and there's so many of these and things, and, you know, there's a whole can of worms argument that, like, where does it stop? Do we blast off the face of Stone Mountain or Mount Rushmore?
A lot of people think we should.
Yeah. So,
at least
I mean,
the Stone Mountain one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Or where does it stop with the founding fathers? Because at the time, some of them owned slaves and this and that. I don't purport to have the answers. I just, my advice would be to encourage people to just for a moment to think about, to walk in someone else's shoes and think about how some of these monuments might make you feel in 2018. 20,000?
That's way in the future.
In 2018,
uh-huh.
Just maybe step outside yourself for a minute and walk in someone else's shoes. That's just Uncle Chuck's advice.
I think it's good advice no matter what. And I think what this is a symptom of the need to a society that needs to heal and is not healing in productive ways right now.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Well,
I don't have the answers either, though, and I certainly don't purport to. So I agree with you on that.
I look forward to hearing all sides in email.
Yeah, no death threats, please. No death threats.
Oh, quickly, we should talk about very famously in the Iraq War when Saddam Hussein's statue was toppled on television. Mm-hmm. And there was always a lot of speculation like, this really reeks of something America cooked up as a bit of a rah-rah thing.
Sure.
And apparently ProPublica looked into it along with the New Yorker magazine, was where the piece was. Said it was a crowd of Iraqis, and it happened to be a statue in front of the Palestine Hotel, which is where a lot of the journalists were. So that's why it got the coverage. And there were Americans, and they were saying, hey, can we have that sledgehammer? Can we have a little help? Can we use that crane on that Humvee?
Now that we think about it, will you guys just go ahead and do it for us?
Well, apparently there was an official request submitted by the Army sergeant saying, hey, they want to use our crane. Can we do this? And they got the go-ahead to do it. So that is the party line story, at least.
Yeah.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
But very indelible image, you know, when that statue was taken down.
Oh, yeah, it definitely was. Like, it fell pretty hard. And Saddam was still alive at the time, too, which made it even more shocking.
He's hiding in a hole.
Kind of an interesting time, like I said, to be in America. Weird, weird time.
Well, I've seen other people call for saying, like, maybe don't take it down. Maybe erect another statue next to Robert E. Lee of Rosa Parks or something. And maybe add to the Stone Mountain monument and make it a history of Atlanta and add Martin Luther King to it and make it more of a diorama and more inclusive. So I've seen arguments all over the place with all kinds of suggestions, because with 1,500 Confederate markers of some kind, I mean, that's a lot of stuff.
A lot of statues to balance things out that we'd have to erect, that kind of thing.
Well, or a lot of statues to tear down. I mean, obviously it's going to come down to and should come down to whatever they want to do locally. But we have one right here in Decatur, Georgia still, you know?
Which one?
I can't remember the name of it, but it's right there in the town square. And there's been a lot of talk in the last couple of years about getting rid of that. So,
yeah.
And then also, like, some people dig in so much to leave that statue there. They take it down. And then a week later, like, has your life really changed materially? Is it that big of a deal that that's not there anymore?
I don't know. I don't know. I think this is all just innuendo, nuance, and illusion and allegory. And nobody's really talking about, or most people aren't talking about what's really being discussed here.
Right.
It's weird, weird time, man. Such a strange time. It's a sad time for America, but it's also a very hopeful time, too, if you really think about it in the right way.
It is. And you know what? I know this is going to be a lightning rod in some ways, but I am happy we're a part of this conversation in some way.
Well, nice. Again,
just throwing it out there.
No death threats, please, everyone. No one likes to get those. Put yourself in our shoes. You wouldn't like getting them. If you want to know more about Confederate monuments, monuments in general, and possibly removing them, go type those words into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. It'll bring up this article. And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this, this one's pretty current. So I'm going to call this current clearing up of accordion definition.
Oh, boy. That's a good choice, Chuck.
Okay, so this is a day or two late, guys, but I just had a chance to listen to the great Mary Celeste episode, and I figured I'd be remiss if I didn't heed the call of the alluring Weird Al Yankovic shout-out, because everyone loves Weird Al. And so now comes the part where I say that I don't actually know anything about accordions, but I think Josh pretty much nailed it the second time through. According to my sources, in general, a melodeon is an accordion with buttons, and an accordion, technically known as a piano accordion, is an accordion with piano keys, not unlike the style played by both Alfred and Frankie Yankovic. No relation, believe it or not.
No way.
Basically all melodeons are accordions, but not all accordions are melodeons. So that, in a nutshell, is how melodeons work, not to be confused with the concertina pictured here, and that is the literal handheld thing that you, like, might think of an old Italian man playing in the 1800s that you just, there are no, well, there may be buttons.
It's a squeeze box like the Who talked about.
See, Mama's got a squeeze box.
Yeah.
And that is from Anonymous.
Is it really? You're not going to say who it's from, huh? Wow.
I don't know who
it's
from.
Anonymous.
I have no idea who it's from. It's just some weird, Weird Al fan.
That's funny. No, my exclamation of surprise was that Alfred and Frankie Yankovic have no relation to Weird Al Yankovic. That's beyond bizarre.
Yeah, and I don't even know who Alfred and Frankie Yankovic are.
I don't either, but surely every Yankovic's related to Weird Al Yankovic, right?
Yeah, but I also have a feeling that like 38% of Yankovics play the accordion.
Right. Well, Weird Al, please, as is custom, we end every episode like this. Please get in touch with us and let us know how you're doing.
Agreed.
Okay? If you're Weird Al Yankovic and you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet to us. I'm at Josh Clark, and you can also hit up the official SYSK podcast one. You can join Chuck on facebook.com/CharlesWChuckBryant or /StuffYouShouldKnow, either one. You can also send us an email, and Jerry too, to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And Weird Al, join us as always at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.